Today on a special Rambling About Cars, 2024 Mustang pricing is in, and whoa, Nelly! Honda CR-V Hybrid Racer is here. Whoa, Nelly! Latest Last Call Dodge teaser is in. What? And we're going to talk about 30 future supercar sports cars that you've been waiting for. And you know what? It's been a long time, so it's Cheap Car Challenge time. So let's roll. It is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith and Mr. Chris Bruce across the way, and we are not alone today.
We are not. We have Mr. Jeff Perez with us as our guest. Jeff, go ahead and introduce yourself. Back on the show.
Hello, I'm back. He's waving. On in a while, but I'm, for all you video viewers out there, you get to see me wave.
Did you fix the light? You fixed the light in the house, right? Because the last time on, you're like...
Well, so this is the original light that we had, and I thought I broke it. So the last time we tried to record, I couldn't because this little light was broken, but it wasn't really broken, and I figured out how to fix it. So
wait, here you fixed the light bulb?
No, it's like a little desk that's awesome. Like light.
Just for our listeners/watchers, Jeff does not have a light in his bedroom, and I do not how you live that life. Like,
it's that's more a, for a different podcast, I think.
I at this point I refuse to do it because we've been here for so long and I haven't had one, and I'm not gonna do it. So
that's like me with my 1977 Montgomery Ward snowblower. I'm two things I'm not doing. One, changing the oil. Nope. I don't know how old the oil is in there, but this thing is from 1977 and it still starts on the first pull. I ain't touching it. Sure. And there's a belt that's about to break. It was about to break like 4 years ago. I'm like, let's just ride this out, man. It's like the Seinfeld episode. We're on E. How far can we go?
Yeah, you can't do it at this point.
You can't touch it. You can't.
So real quick, before we kick off the show, as I have been saying the past few weeks now, March 22nd, mark your calendars. That is when Rambling About Cars goes live. You'll be able to join us. You will be able to live chat with us when, you know, you throw in a comment. We're going to see it live and we're going to be able to put it up and react and comment to it. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a big change for the show. Going to have to kind of change some stuff as how we work on the back end and stuff like that. But looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun one. So March 22nd, here we come.
Can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait. It's going to be excited to ramble with all the ramblers out there. Exactly. But before we get there, how about the 2024 Ford Mustang? Of course, it is new. It's the seventh generation. You know that it debuted last September. We have, I guess, the final piece of the puzzle for 2024 that we've been waiting for, and that's pricing. And it's up. I mean, we knew it would be up. Specifically, this is the first time in the history of the Mustang where the entry-level price is over $30,000. Starts at $32,515. That includes a $1,595 destination charge, which incidentally is also up for this year. I think it was like $1,325 or something last year. So destination a little bit more. Mustang, if you just go like by entry-level base price, it's a lot more. It's up like $5,000 or so from last year, but there is a catch.
There are caveats to that.
Yeah. Right. There's a pretty notable catch in that now the 10-speed automatic is the standard transmission. That's what you get with the base model Mustang, the cheapest one. You get the 10-speed automatic. Last year, it was a $1,500 option or so. So when you get the apples to apples comparison going here, it's $1,775 more expensive than last year, which I mean that's a little bit easier to take when you look at that that way. Okay, comparable with the transmission. Yes, it's a new generation car. It's completely new interior, revamped styling on the outside. But I mean, prices are up, and they're up. I mean, they're up across the board. I can run down some pricing really quick if you guys want to hear it. Do you want to hear it?
I do. I'm curious. That's why I'm here.
You're curious.
How much the manual is on the base model? So you said it's an option or is it not available?
Well, I guess that's okay. There is. Thank you, Mr. Perez, for being here, because there is one more piece of the puzzle we don't have yet. And that's the configurator.
Right.
So Ford announced pricing, and we managed to get some extra, just a little bit of extra info from Ford, just kind of breaking down some of the different features, but we don't know yet all the options and what they're going to be. So we don't have the ability to do like a most expensive yet. And among those, we don't know if the manual is even available on the entry-level Mustang. It might just be automatic only at this point. We don't know. We're still waiting to see the configurator to see how all the options shake out, because there was no pricing offered for a manual. And Ford says specifically the entry-level price for the Mustang EcoBoost Fastback, actually technically $30,920 before destination, and that includes the automatic transmission. So,
And we should point out to the folks listening that Ford was very clear that at least the GT model will be available with a manual gearbox.
Yes.
If you get the V8, you will be able to get a manual. We aren't sure yet if you get the EcoBoost 4-cylinder, whether a manual is even available or not. So just
right. And the pricing out. The least expensive Mustang V8, which would be the GT Fastback, that's $43,090. That does include the 6-speed manual. That's pricing for the 6-speed. It's kind of interesting because you go through, I mean, there are obviously the EcoBoost, the 2.3-liter 4-cylinder, and then there's the 5-liter V8 for the GT. The EcoBoost cars, EcoBoost tops out at $43,540. That's an EcoBoost premium convertible. Or you could get the base Mustang GT Fastback for $43,090. So if you really want your 4-cylinder, you can spiff it up and be a little more expensive than the GT. Of course, EcoBoost Premium, I mean, that's going to get you all kinds of features. That'll get you the combined digital displays under the single piece of glass, which I think we were talking about, Bruce, a couple weeks ago.
I think we were talking about that.
Yeah. Where we had the quote unquote spy photos of a base model Mustang showing what the interior looked like with those displays separate. And I mean, I think we were pretty polite on that. I mean, it's not a bad look, but it certainly doesn't look as good, right?
No, exactly. And one thing I wanted to point out is that if you want a V8 with the convertible, that's $53,110. Mm-hmm. So just shy, just a little bit less than 10 grand premium between the 4-cylinder and the V8 for the convertible. Mm-hmm. That's some money.
I think that the destination fees for a lot of manufacturers are kind of insane these days. Like almost $1,500 for a Mustang just in destination fees. That's insane to me. But I'm also curious to see how the breakdown goes with, like you said, like we don't know if the base model has a manual yet. Right. Someone probably smarter than me at Ford has a breakdown of how many cars they sold and why it would make sense to kill that manual in theory. But it seems weird to me to not have a manual Mustang, at least the base model. I don't know. I feel like that's a car that a lot of enthusiasts are buying.
I mean, I think I agree with you, Jeff. Especially since, I mean, obviously a manual is available with the V8. Maybe it's a packaging issue. I mean, I'm sure the transmissions are different between, you know, what's behind the V8 and what's behind the 4-cylinder. If they're showing, okay, what is, you know, like a just a ridiculously low take rate for manuals on the EcoBoost, we'll have to wait and see. That's one of the pieces that we'll still have to wait and see on. One thing that I did find a little interesting here, when you take a deeper dive on the numbers, of course, this year we have Mustang Dark Horse, and that's the it's unofficially going to take the place of the Mach 1 in the current lineup.
We haven't really heard exactly.
Right, like, right. I mean, Dark Horse.
Things like the Bullet and the Mach 1, are they going to get even better to go above that? Or we kind of don't know yet. So it's an interesting question.
Right. This is first year of the seventh generation Mustang. So, I mean, we know Ford, eventually there's going to be a California special. There will be a Shelby, there's going to be a
GT350. And then 2 years down the line, there's going to be a GT500. Maybe there will be a King of the Road.
There will be many cars in there.
Ford is pretty good at bringing back trims that, you know, have been gone for decades or whatever. Sure. Is there a trim that we haven't seen in a long time that we think maybe they could bring back, or we'd want to see them bring back?
Boss.
Yeah.
The last time we saw a boss was the Boss 302, I think, was 2013. Yeah. And I'm actually surprised we didn't see it. We didn't see a boss to close out the sixth generation. I mean, they brought back Mach 1, which, I mean, Mach 1 had been gone since 2003. So that was a good one to bring back. But I thought a real send off to the sixth gen would have been a boss. Yeah. I love the looks of the Mach 1, though.
Yeah, that looks great.
Can I throw one out there?
Yeah.
What if we did a new SVO? What? Because the EcoBoost turbocharged four cylinder. No, I'm not. Oh, I'm not.
No, that's good. I've been saying it for years, but Ford doesn't listen to me anymore. So,
you've got the turbocharged. Do the hardest of hardcore versions of that. You know, strip as much as you can out, and do a new Mustang SVO. I think it's time to do that.
Well, Jeff, a few years ago, was it, you drove the EcoBoost Performance Package Mustang, and you thought that was better than the GT, right?
That is my second favorite Mustang I've ever driven, behind the Shelby. And I think my only issue with that car, because they did such a good job of like reducing the weight a little bit, tuning the suspension a little bit better, and that engine is just amazing. My only like issue, I guess, it's not even really an issue, is that they could have just slapped an ST badge on there and just sort of continued the ST lineage to the Mustang. I think that would have been kind of cool. But other than that Mustang's pretty much perfect. I love that thing.
Yeah. There are a lot of people that feel that way about the original SVO from 84 to 86, where it was like, no, it doesn't have a V8, but it kind of set a new example of, you don't necessarily need to have a V8 in this car to have it be a lot of fun. It was lighter, just the weight balance was better, the brakes were better, the seats were better. I was surprised they didn't do that with the high performance package. That seemed like a really awkward name when it's like SVO is right freaking there in front of you, man.
SVO, and
it's
like ST, like so many good names they could have put on there to brand that better. And I don't even think, like, I know a lot of people, just casual, you know, car fans that didn't even know that was a thing. They didn't even know that term existed until I like explained it to them. So I think that was sort of a miss on the branding there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe we'll see it in the new gen. One thing that I wanted to say, but here before we moved on, we go back to Mustang Dark Horse. I mean, that has a lot of suspension upgrades. Obviously it has a meaner look. It's got a 500 horsepower tune on its 5-liter V8 engine. The outgoing Mach 1 was 480 horsepower. All the V8 Mustangs are 480 now. So I guess you could sort of say the Dark Horse has the Mach 1 spot, but it's a little bit cheaper than Mach 1. $59,565 with destination included. And I think it's like about $500 less than the Mach 1 is right now on Ford's website. So kind of an interesting pricing choice there. I mean, I think the Dark Horse, you're going to get improvements all around in Dark Horse versus Mach 1. Not that Mach 1's a slouch, but interesting that they kind of leveled it off at the high end, but they really jacked it up on the low end.
I think it's really worth like underlining and like highlighting and bold and italicizing exactly what you were saying, is that this is just the first year models. Yep. And I can't say I know this because I don't know it like actually, but just judging by the history of the Mustang, you're only going to get hotter versions as it goes forward. That's been true since the very beginning, and it would be crazy to think that's not going to be the case for the new model. The Dark Horse is the top of the line as it launches, and it's only going to get more powerful, better handling, you know, whatever from here. Mm-hmm.
No, I think you're spot on there. And gentlemen, if we have a little bit more time, do you want to talk a little bit about how Mustang is now lining up with Challenger and Camaro, as both of those cars are getting ready to head into the sunset, if you will, with a brand new Mustang generation? Here's where the pricing gets interesting, because our colleague Anthony put all of this together in a post that you can see at MotorOne.com. It's a great write-up if you're curious about how Detroit's three war horses, if you will, are stacking up right now. You can go buy a base model Camaro that's with the four-cylinder engine, $27,795. That does not include destination, which is another $1,395. Compare that to the Mustang, what we just talked about. The Camaro's undercutting a little bit, but the cheapest Dodge Challenger, and let's not forget, guys, the Dodge Challenger is now the best-selling pony / muscle car in the United States
for 2 years running.
For 2 years running, and guess what? It starts at $32,000. So, do you think maybe Ford was sitting back and taking a peek and saying, "Well, we've got a new Mustang. Maybe now we can pump it up and say, hey, we're right here with Challenger," instead of trying to undercut. I mean, just a theory, because I found that very interesting, the pricing structure of the entry-level Mustang and the Challenger to be the same.
Yeah, I think there's an argument to that. The thing is that the Challenger has always been a bigger vehicle than both the Mustang, or it hasn't always, in the latest incarnation of them, is a larger vehicle than the Mustang or the Camaro. Is that you can... The Challenger is a bit more of a true four-seater, whereas the Mustang and Camaro are kind of more in that 2+2 range, where you could fit an adult back there, but they're going to be kind of cramped. Whereas with the Challenger, you could, you know, again, maybe they're going to be a little bit more cramped, but you could put someone in the back of a Challenger. And so it's an interesting dichotomy between
the Camaro. Vehicles. A Camaro, I don't even know. That might be too generous to say you can fit a normal-sized human in those back seats. That is one of the worst back seats of any two-door you can buy, other than like the BRZ or something.
Sure. And even if they fit, I mean, it's like, can you see anything back there? No.
God, no. I mean, you're basically sitting sideways in that seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the ultimate take me to the secret location vehicle. You don't have to put the hood over their head. Just jump in the back of the Camaro. Where are we? I have no idea. We're in Jupiter. I don't know.
Well, what's interesting too about the Camaro is that they have Chevy has the cheapest V8 version with the LT1 that was introduced, 2020?
Yeah, they came out with that, and I thought that was a smart move.
I love that car. Like, that is a genuinely great, like, cloth seats, very basic, very like nothing inside, but you get the SS V8 and it drives like, I think the Camaro still is the best driving of the three, in my opinion. So I think that's a really great bargain for that car.
Yep.
The Camaro, though, has just sort of like fallen off in recent years. Like, they haven't done anything.
Well, exactly. That's what I was about to say. They haven't done anything to it. Yeah. It's just, you know, they keep making them, but they have done nothing to kind of improve or change or tweak or just, you know, we heard those rumors for a while. They were going to do a special edition. And so far, that hasn't come to pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we haven't heard anything yet. I mean, obviously, rumors that it's been going away have been out for a couple of years now. Yeah. I think the latest is that some sort of final edition might be coming next year,
Or late this year, maybe.
And I mean, I think the Camaro is fantastic. I think it looks good. I think the visibility inside is leaves a little to be desired.
I'm going to use the word atrocious,
but I mean, it's got good power. And Jeff, to your point, $37,796 will get you into a Camaro LT1 with a V8.
Yeah. And hopefully there's an EV Camaro after that, though.
A lot of power at that price level. $40,000 will put you into a Dodge Challenger. Well, sorry, 41, 40,980 puts you into a Dodge Challenger with a 5.7 Hemi. So Mustang is now easily the most expensive of the three in terms of,
but it's getting newest of the bunch. You have to kind of take that into account too. The Camaro is old and the Challenger is even older. That, like, if you were a customer out there, you would have to kind of weigh your preferences. Like, do I want a more modern vehicle that might have more modern safety aids?
Yeah, but Bruce, how old is the Challenger? And it's the best selling.
Yeah.
It's been the best selling for the last 2 years.
I mean,
modern is neat, but I think in this case, it's more of we just want our cool looks and power, you know?
Yeah. Sure. Well, Dodge is smart too, because how many different versions have they released in however long this generation or this platform has been on? Like, there are a million different Challengers between you know, yeah, whatever, that when this facelift came out and now, whereas the Camaro, you're like, oh, the Camaro still exists. And the Mustang, yeah, Mustang, the Ford does a good job of that too, but the Challenger, like, just absolutely kills it with all the additions that they have.
Well, and all, yeah, all the little special additions. I mean, like the little stuff,
yeah,
that you're not going to see again. I mean, Mustang, they kind of stick with their regular kind of palette of special edition models, right?
I mean, yes, but Camaro is the worst. Camaro, it just seems like Chevrolet has kind of like pushed it off into a corner, yep, and just like, we're going to keep making them. If you want to buy one, go ahead, but we're not going to do anything for yes, you.
Whereas, I mean, somebody at Chevrolet,
Jeff was saying, though, there have been umpteen special edition Challengers, and there have been a good number of special edition Mustangs as well. And it just seems like the Camaro, it's just like, there's some guy like, yeah, I'll build one if you want it. Like, okay.
It's like, I mean, how hard is it to find some stickers, Chevy?
Yeah,
I mean, that's all you need.
So many good old names in their, you know, repertoire. Just throw some stickers on there. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
But hey, they are.
give me a just a sort of like a modestly equipped regular Camaro with a V6. Call it the Rockford edition. You'll sell them, man. You'll sell them. I'm willing to bet that people under the age of probably 40 or 45 are like, what does that mean?
I'm glad Jeff's look up on the Rockford files and kids, not our former coworker Clint Simone, because you would be spending 5 to 10 minutes explaining that joke to him.
Just give me a. Well, actually, you know, he drove a Firebird, though. What am I thinking?
He did, actually.
I'm even terrible on that joke. Who drove? We'll have to save that for another podcast.
That far off. Anyway.
We'll have to save it for another podcast. Just call it the Camaro Right Now Edition.
Yeah.
Go buy a Camaro right now. Get the Right Now Edition. You can have a V8 right now. I'm in the wrong.
Van Halen has a song you could use for that ad. Sorry, oh. I listen to that song weirdly a lot because that music video entrances me. So, but anyway,
right now we're talking about cars.
Exactly.
Right. And right now we're really rambling off the rails about cars.
I'm just laughing at the Right Now video because it's so absurd. Sorry. That's me in the corner.
Well, have we Mustang this out here? We're 22 minutes in. We've been on one car.
I think this Mustang is broken. So, yeah.
But yeah, pricing is out. As soon as the configurator is out, check back in. We'll have more Mustang talk for you.
Totally. And so new Mustang will be available, am I mistaken, second quarter of this year? Is that right?
Yeah, it sounds right. I think early summer is when it's supposed to be hitting dealerships. So
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's, you know, a couple months, we'll know exactly and be able to tell you folks about it. But let's move into another topic, and that is the fact that Honda has shoved an IndyCar engine into a Honda CR-V. Yep, what I said is exactly what has happened.
Did you just hear that collective gasp across the internet? An IndyCar engine? How much does this cost? No, people, you're not going to buy it. Unfortunately, you're not going to buy it. This is a one-off from Honda Performance Development, HPD. Actually, a bunch of Honda groups within the company, their design crews, engineers, they all got together on this. It's officially called the Honda CR-V Hybrid Racer. And what is that, you say? Well, as I said, and I had the chance to actually talk with some of the Honda people before this went up, and I got some great info out of that discussion. This is a tube framed, basically it's an Indy car with a Honda CR-V body on the top half, because the bottom half is all carbon fiber and ridiculously flared fenders. And they're ridiculously flared because I think the rear wheels are something like 11 inches wide. It's got massive tires all the way around. And yes, there is an Indy car engine in the back. This previews, but isn't exactly the 2024 Indy powertrain that you're going to see from Honda's Indy cars. But it does preview what's coming, and that's a 2.2 liter Honda V6 engine that's tuned to run on Shell 100% renewable race fuel. And it is a hybrid, but you won't find batteries here. This uses a supercapacitor storage system that's not entirely unlike what Lamborghini is doing. Now, total output is said to be right around 800 horsepower. Honda doesn't give us a further breakdown on various power levels. They do mention that, I mean, you could run it for a little while just on electric power, but this is designed to just be just a ridiculously insanely mad world crazy vehicle. And I just love it because it's a CRV body. They use a legit CRV body. Yes, it's a tube frame underneath. But the front doors, the top half of the doors at least, open up butterfly style. The rear doors, they don't open at all because they're attached to the entire back half of the SUV that opens up like a clamshell where you can see the engine underneath. I mean, it's a bonkers machine, and they built it as what they say to be a rolling laboratory. They really want to explore performance aspects of hybridization, electrification, not just for their racing program, but possibly for road use. Now, sure. When they said that, of course, I was like, oh, so that means you're going to make a Honda CR-V SI or a Type R, right? And they said promptly, no comment. And it was I want to be very clear. It was a very powerful, we don't comment on future products. So, you're not going to see this in dealerships, and I doubt you'll see a CR-V SI or anything like that. But
Jeff, you and I are both, I know, fans of the Honda CR-Z, specifically the very small run, which was available through HPD, the supercharged version that, you know, it was an aftermarket upgrade, but it was aftermarket through kind of the factory's back door. You could kind of, it wasn't factory necessarily, but you could kind of make it that way. And it kind of reminds me of this. This is the far more extreme version of that, because you could buy that supercharger for the CR-Z like at a dealer if you kind of knew the right people to talk to, it seemed like, whereas this is a track only thing. But it to me, it feels like this is the next step in that kind of direction.
I'm going to be the contrarian here and say this is very stupid and I don't like it.
Oh, I
know. I'm sorry.
Oh no, go ahead. Go ahead.
My problem with this is that, like, I like concept cars a lot, right? I love concept cars. I think some of them are really cool, but when you get to the point where it is so far out of the realm of reality of anything that could ever happen in the Honda lineup, then it's just dumb to me. The livery is dumb. The wing is dumb. The powertrain's amazing as an IndyCar powertrain, but the loose usage of, oh, this technology could, you know, trickle down to a CR-V is like so silly to me. Like, I think this is so ridiculous. And I know I'm like hating on this 800 horsepower CR-V, but I don't know. Like, they could have done something that was actually kind of closer to production, a kind of cooler that you can maybe see happening, but I don't get it with this one.
Well, I thought a little bit along those lines too. And I was able to do the media roundtable, where I had a chance to talk to HPD president David Salters, and he was, the enthusiasm from him was infectious. This works for me because, yes, it has a CR-V body, or at least part of a CR-V body. So it has a CR-V shape, but I mean, it's not a CR-V.
Yeah,
right.
It's not a CR-V. The reason they went that route, they were talking about, okay, you know, we want to do something where we can really explore different facets of electrification, in performance aspects. So we're going to build this car. We're going to build this vehicle. And I mean, I think mostly what they're going to gain from this is going to go into their racing program. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have this vehicle, and their discussion was, you know, as, cause I even asked him, I was like, you know, what the hell this is, you know, why a CR-V? And they were just like, you know, we thought let's just do something very crazy. Obviously they're looking to get some attention with this, and I think they will. Talking to them, it felt a little bit to me Now, I wasn't around SVT in the early days in the golden age there at Ford, but it felt sort of like that, where it was like, you know, here's a bunch of people, some engineers. They're like, we kind of have some leeway to do stuff here. What can we do to just have some fun? And here comes this CRV.
Mm-hmm. There are certain racing partnerships, or like, I love that Honda's committed to IndyCar. I think that's awesome. I think IndyCar is amazing, and not enough people, you know, give it the respect that it deserves. And we've seen like some racing partnerships with production cars in the past. I think one of my favorites was the Q60. Oh man, what was it called? The F1 Renault powered one that came out a few years ago. It was the black and yellow.
I think I remember what you're talking about there.
But you're talking about, but I'm looking it up.
Yeah, to me, stuff like that feels more genuine than like this, because ideally, you could build a 700 horsepower Q60 with Renault hybrid power. Like, that would be awesome. Like, knowing that this is a CRV and it'll never happen, and it's just a big marketing thing, I'm like, that's where I'm kind of turned off. But yeah, it's definitely cool. But
it's fair. I can see that point.
Yeah. Are you thinking of the black S? Is that the one?
I think that's what it was called. Yeah, the Q60.
That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah,
the black S.
Cool. And they actually thought about, I mean, there was a point where they were saying they were going to build that, but.
Yep, that's what I'm saying here. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it works out, but.
I can see your point there a little bit, and it's interesting you bring that up, because I might start to side with you as time goes on, because they built this thing and they're saying it's a rolling laboratory and it's done up. It's got the front suspension from their NSX GT3 car. The rear suspension is Indy. It's got big brakes. It's not just like an engine with a tube frame and, hey, let's push it around and say, look what we did. Yeah. It's built to race. And it's like, are they going to race it? No,
then I'll be on board if they race.
Or at least that's the answer right now, because when you look at it, it's got that ginormous wing on the back. The first thing that pops to my mind is Pike's Peak. It looks like it's ready to run Pike's Peak.
Now that would be cool.
And that question actually came up, and they said specifically, no, we're not going to run Pike's Peak this year. There was some Group B questions going on with it. Okay, you know, It feels almost like it kind of has like this wildness of a Group B rally car from the 80s. They said there was some influence there. But for right now, the plan is to just take it to IndyCar races, let people see it, do some demonstration runs.
Which is kind of a bummer in a way.
It is a little bit. I was a little bummed out by that. But they did say, you know, at some point, it's probably going to get the better of us, and we'll see how fast it goes around a track somewhere. But it's just like, I hope you do, because that's kind of what it's built for, you know?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, Honda, they sponsor Mid-Ohio because it's less than an hour from their factory in Marysville. Take this thing to Mid-Ohio and set a lap record with it. Go do it. And then, you know, give us all the assets and tell us how cool it is. Like, I would love them to do something like that.
If they're sticking to their guns and using this for testing as a rolling laboratory, as they say, I will expect them to run this around a track somewhere. Honda certainly made a very, very... how do I say it without sounding negative? They were very aggressive in promoting the new Civic Type R at different road courses. Now, obviously, this isn't a production vehicle, but I don't see any reason why they couldn't say, hey, our CRV hybrid racer, purpose-built racing SUV just did, you know, Suzuka in like 112 or something. I don't know what a fast lap is at Suzuka. I don't remember, but if this is a marketing machine, and I agree with you, Jeff, you don't do this and make a CRV with the intent of just kind of keeping it under the radar. So there's obviously a marketing aspect here. Mm-hmm. Capitalize on the marketing aspect while you're capitalizing on learning about your aspects of electrification and performance.
Yeah. Well, you know what would really change my mind too, Honda, if you're listening, let me drive it and then I'll say a bunch of nice things about it.
There you go. There you go. I would be on board with that. I would ride in the passenger seat. Actually, I don't think there is a passenger seat.
No, there is. In some of the pictures, there is. You could ride in the passenger seat.
There's no back seat because there's an engine where the back seat's meant to be.
Exactly.
Come on. Can we just acknowledge the cool factor there?
Yeah.
Oh, your SUV has three rows. That's cute.
I do like how the back kind of comes up like a clamshell as the... as the engine cover, like the whole back comes up. That's cool.
The whole back. And you know, if you were to just take that off, it kind of looks kind of cool. You could do a
ridgeline.
Just without it. Yeah, there you go. But that's the Honda CR-V Hybrid Racer. I mean, that came out here just the beginning of this week. Definitely not something you'd expect from Honda. And I hope we see more on it.
So real quick, before we get into Jeff's baby, which is something he worked on for many, many, many hours, before we get into that, we're going to hit a teaser that we saw this week. And that is the latest teaser for the latest Dodge Last Call model. But apparently 7.1 pounds is important. Why is it important? We don't know. But it somehow involves leprechauns. Your guess is as good as ours there.
I mean, can we get any stranger? I shouldn't say that because we probably could.
Well, I can tell you guys off mic the leprechaun story because I've been told the leprechaun story. I can't tell it yet, but
Stay tuned for a future podcast for that because I have to hear the leprechaun story. Well, let me do a quick kind of 411 on this for people. Because I've been following these teasers. It's the third teaser they've dropped for their final Last Call Dodge vehicle, which we know it's going to be a Challenger. Of course, they announced this Last Call series last year. This car was supposed to debut at SEMA last year. It was delayed. It's now going to debut on March 20th, and Dodge has been releasing teasers that are supposed to provide hints as to its name, its nature, all kinds of things. So here's the new teaser. It's just a short video showing like the smaller leprechaun-ish body with the weird demon-y face. And then this super human
video, I'm not afraid about showing. Cause like, if they get mad about us showing this, then that's just stupid. And then
you have
product for them.
Right. And then you have the super duper leprechaun-y kind of thing with the yellow eyes, steps on a scale. There's a difference of 7.1 pounds. And that's the crux of the teaser. However, Dodge calls this video, the title is Density Matters. So we theorize, right? Okay, 7.1 pounds, density matters. What's the definition of density? It's what a unit of mass in a certain space, or in automotive speak, it's like how much air and fuel can you cram into a cylinder, maybe? That's kind of the density talk. We've been theorizing, okay, is this new car going to have a lot more power and be 7.1 pounds heavier? Well, I mean, that's a straightforward interpretation. That could be it.
We discussed it in our chat. Does it have 7.1 pounds more boost?
Yes.
Jeff, what's your guess?
I think they put 7.1 pounds of chocolate coins in the trunk to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Sure. I think that's what they're doing.
Everyone. 7.1 pounds of chocolate. All the buyers.
I'm not going to do a silly accent.
You should not do that.
I mean, I've seen some theories actually, because I've been watching some of Dodge's socials on this, and there have been more than a few people. I'm kind of surprised because this doesn't really make any sense to me. They point out that the Helifant V8, the crate engine, that's 426 cubic inches. Maybe they're saying this has that engine, but it's a 7 liter V8. This is 7.1. I suppose if they punched it out or stroked it to 7, but that seems like just a ridiculous amount of extra work and effort for a very presumably a very limited run special edition vehicle.
Sure.
But I mean, that's the, some people are talking about that also, as a possible theory.
What 7.1 pounds means. Cause they, it clearly shows pounds in the teaser. So, it's gotta be pounds of something. And so maybe the block weighs 7.1 more pounds. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
what is it? 7.1 pounds of what?
Right. And that's part of the mystery. There are a lot of theories out there. Of course, I mean, you can send yours into podcast or motorone.com and we'll talk about it. And you can also post your theory on our YouTube video at Motor One Podcast. And you can post your theory on our article in the comments that goes up every Friday. I'm saying that now because it's a nice little segue to get it in right now. But I want to point out here, this is the third teaser. The first teaser was just like a close up of this demon-y looking face with red eyes, which demon red eye. I don't know. Am I jumping off the deep end on that? I don't think so.
That works.
And then the second teaser showed this little kind of leprechaun-y thing with the demon-y face. Gets injected with an IV of golden fluid and turns into like the leprechaun-y from hell, which rumors have said, okay, this thing is probably going to run on E85. That seems kind of a match to me. So, I mean, that's where we're at right now. Demon red eye E85.
But what does that have to do with leprechauns?
7 pounds. I have no idea.
I wonder if it's just a St. Patrick's thing. Like they're going to. When is St. Patrick's Day? I don't know.
Isn't it in April?
Is it March 20th? I never even looked. I never even thought about that connection. It's like, it's just like, where the hell are these leprechauns coming from? It's like, I mean, I guess it's not as weird as like seals or.
No, it's
or
March 17th, which is close. That's close. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's close.
That's you know, not, we can't rule that out.
And, you know, there's one other clue that's sort of been missed that was actually dropped way, way back when all of these special edition Last Call models were first announced. We were shown a car under a cover, a Challenger shaped car, and the license plate said one fast 29. Mm-hmm. And that was said to be, okay, that's a clue as to what's under here. So there you go, sleuths. I like a good mystery as much as the next person, but only for like about a minute and a half. No, and then I just get frustrated and I try to look up the cheat codes.
Fair enough.
All these leprechauns are reminding me that I got to get a Shamrock Shake from McDonald's soon.
Oh. Yeah.
Are those available yet? I'm not a McDonald's goer.
Sure they are. I got to look.
Pretty soon they should be, especially if St. Patrick's Day is the 17th. You know.
McDonald's is the only place I have that's within a 40-mile round trip of me now.
Jeez.
It's 10 miles into town, 10 miles back. Okay. The other places are all 20 miles away. So Shamrock Shake it is.
Well, with that mystery that we don't have
off the rails there.
No. It's not off the rails at all. We don't have an answer to that. I know the leprechaun story because I was told it today. I don't know what 7.1 stands for. And that's not a lie. That's not me, you know, blowing smoke up anyone. I don't know what 7.1 stands for.
Well, I mean, it can't be just like the straight boost pressure because I think a stock Hellcat is something like 11 or 12 pounds already.
Something like that.
And the red eye is even more. So it makes sense if that's an additional, but I mean, but then we have the scale in the background, which suggests like weight, like straight up weight. So it's March 20th. All will be revealed.
But here's the thing. It's fun that they're teasing it this way, because even for us who are writing about this car, it gives us a mystery that we're trying to solve. Like we pretend we're car experts. So, you know, we keep trying to figure out like, okay, 7.1 pounds. What could that mean? Oh, does it weigh 7.1 pounds more? Is there 7.1 pounds more boost pressure? Is there what could 7.1 pounds mean? And also taking that with the other ones where, Smith, like you were saying, the first one, it looked like a devil with red eyes. Oh, is that a demon red eye? Like that's totally a logical thing. It's just, it's fun and it's interesting.
And now watch, it'll debut and it'll be like, oh no, this is our hybrid V6 model. That's called. What do you mean? Where did you get Demon Red Eye from on our teasers? That has nothing to do with this. This is called the Dodge Challenger Hybrid Paneling Special.
Hey, if they did a wood panel Challenger, I think people would love that shit.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Nope.
No. Okay. I'm just me. Just okay.
Nope. Just you.
Okay. Well, Jeff, it's your time to shine, buddy.
Yes. Because
you wrote up, or you updated, I should say, our upcoming supercar, hypercar, sports car, muscle car feature. So I'm going to throw that up right now. Yeah, this was a big one. This has been, you know, one of the stories that has, we talk about evergreen stuff online and in this industry, and evergreen basically means, you know, it never kind of goes away. It's evergreen. It's always around.
You update it and Jeff,
you put it up and then, you know, you update it from time to time, every year, every 6 months, something like that. And Jeff, you took a bunch of time and you did a really big update to the story. And I think it's worth talking about because not only is it interesting in terms of traffic, it's interesting because it's interesting. So I'm not going to interrupt you anymore. It's your time to shine, buddy.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting, especially lately, is that there's a transition, right? We're quickly transitioning to EVs and hybrids and plug-ins. And at first that was just for passenger cars, right? And now we're seeing a lot of supercars and hypercars with sort of the same ideas. And we've been writing a lot about those. I mean, we wrote about the Ferrari future hypercar recently. We wrote about what Alfa Romeo was doing, which you can see here on the screen. And I found it super interesting, the amount of stories that we had on supercar rumors that were upcoming, and I wanted to go through and update this and just put them all together and have them there. So,
and we have them all. I mean, I don't think you left anything unturned. I mean, you even have vehicles in here that it's unclear if they will go into production, but we really, really hope they do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are rumors, although there are actually, I'd say not a lot of them are rumors, but a lot of them are reports that we have or confirmations that we have that something is coming. And then there are the rumors that are like, okay, well, you know, maybe there's going to be a new Audi electric supercar in the next 2 or 3 years, or we know that a Shelby is coming eventually. We just don't have confirmation or details on that. So that's part of it too. You sort of have to accept that the rumor mill can be streaky sometimes and just go with it. But yeah, I think it's a fun list.
Right. I think it's worth saying that there are some rumors we hear and we think, oh, that's never going to happen. And then there are some rumors, like you were saying, we know the Shelby name's going to come back. It has way too much just value in this industry. The Shelby name's going to come back, and the way things are going, could it come back on an electric vehicle? Yeah, that seems reasonable. I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how do we want to go through this? I don't think we'll have time to touch on all 30, but we've got Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio EV, Alfa Romeo supercar. Jeff, this one is particularly good because, I mean, as you mentioned here, there hasn't even been anything like officially said about it, but we heard that deposits have already been taken, right?
The Alfa Romeo supercar / sports car, I don't know if we know the output or what the engine's going to be like, is 100% confirmed that it's happening. When, how, where, we don't know, but Alfa is taking orders, so they're going to build something soon. And I think a lot of the rumors or a lot of the reports there are like, this is going to be their last, you know, old school kind of supercar, kind of in the same vein of the 4C and the 8C. And then if you see on this list too, is the 1,000 horsepower Giulia EV rumor, which is probably going to be the next, you know, generation of Alfa Romeo supercars. So I think Alfa Romeo is in an interesting spot now that they're going to really push the high end sports car and supercar market in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. That's a Stellantis thing in general. Like, we kind of heard the same thing from Maserati, is that they are basically, if there is someone out there willing to give them the money to build a one-off or a limited production vehicle, they are going to be very happy to take it. And I wouldn't be surprised that the same thing isn't out there for Alfa Romeo, that if they think they have a customer base for a special vehicle, that, you know, they're going to explore that. And yeah, it's fascinating that, you know, we're going potentially to have two high performance Alfa Romeos in the near-ish future.
Yeah. And Aston Martin, I mean, if we want to jump to the next one, is the same thing, where it's like Valkyrie was their high-end, top-end hypercar, and they're going to sell, you know, just a few hundred to some lucky customers. But right now they have Valhalla and they have Vanquish also coming out, sort of same style, similar designs, mid-engine. Like, they're really pushing the supercar and sports car space too with these two coming out. So,
and I think the Valhalla is good to have on the list, because I think a lot of people, and I say this because I'm one of them, thought it was already out, or it was about to be out, and it's sort of a reminder, like, no, it's not yet.
Yeah. Well, so the car that you see here, if you're watching on video, is actually the prototype, the original prototype. And then I believe that they do have a more production ready version of the car. So they're getting close. I mean, 2024 release date is estimated, but I mean, if we see it by the end of 2023, I wouldn't be surprised, and then goes on sale in 2024. But yeah, the Valhalla is next, and then Vanquish is going to get a total redo after that.
If we could, gentlemen, can we jump down to the Buick Wildcat EV for a minute? We don't have to talk about it. Let's just look at it.
Wait, in a good way or a bad way? Because
in a good way, in every possible good way. Buick needs this
Smith,
car.
Man,
the chrome wheels are really bad.
No, the front
the rest
end
of the design
really
is pretty
bad.
Cool.
Well, no, yeah. The front end is good. I like, Buick says that's going to be sort of their design language going forward. We saw that on the Envision, the updated Envision. The wheels might be a bit much, but no, I want this Buick to be a bit much. It's been a long time since we had a really good looking Buick car. Buick
is just something.
They just have their little core group of SUVs that kind of stick together, and they're good vehicles. Reliability in the last couple of years is way up there, and they have decent technology. Now they just need to stand out a little bit, and maybe a halo vehicle like this can help them do that.
The Wildcat. When I was looking back at this list, I didn't even realize that the Wildcat name has been around for as long as it has and on other concept cars, and
50-60 years, something like that.
So it's interesting that they brought it back. I don't necessarily think that this exact car is going to go into production, but Buick said that it'll definitely be an influence on future products. So hopefully we see a coupe. Hopefully we see a sporty coupe from Buick in the next few years. But
okay, so that's where you lose me, the sporty part. I don't think, much like Cadillac, and what they're actually doing it right, in my opinion, with the Celestiq, Buick shouldn't be a sporty brand. It could be, you could have a powerful car, you know, you could have a powerful Buick with a lot of horsepower, but focus on comfort and things like that and sell that to buyers, because that's what you've done. That's what people, you know, that's what created the brand. So stick with that. And it's happened for decades now where American automakers have been pursuing German automakers, BMW and Audi specifically, Mercedes-Benz less so slightly, in my opinion, is that those brands are sporty, you know, much tauter, stiffer suspensions versus kind of the classic American luxury car. And I feel like Buick should stick with that. And I think I'm going to get some hate mail for saying that, but I not every luxury car should be sporty, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you for the most part. I mean, I think I said this from a long time ago, that Cadillac just needs to go in the ultra luxe, like Rolls Royce adjacent. Yes. Like they need to just build $200,000, $300,000 cars and forget whatever they're doing now. And I think Buick isn't as prestigious as Cadillac in that respect. No. So I think they could, they can still go premium and still go luxury. Like this could be a $60,000, $70,000, you know, luxury coupe maybe. And to your point, it doesn't need to have crazy performance. It just needs to be a really, really nice premium vehicle.
Okay, Jeff, you and I agree completely then.
I'm going to solve this whole dilemma right now.
Okay.
Paint it black, put a Grand National badge on it.
Oh, God.
Ooh, okay, well, that's...
We should do that rendering. We'll take the Buick Wildcat EV and make it a GNX.
Oh, I'm writing that down right now. Holy crap. That's one of those, why didn't we think of that sooner moments? I'm not even kidding either. I'm writing this down.
No, I think that's totally valid. Yeah. Again,
you Jeff, can talk while I write. I'm not. I don't get confused that easily.
Again, Jeff, you've kind of put together this list for us. So, what other highlights do you think there are? I'm happy to talk about anything.
Dodge Charger Daytona is interesting. We've already seen the prototype. We've seen videos of that weird exhaust. Whether a lot of people don't like it, I think it's kind of interesting, but I think that's going to be a tough one. So that one's coming out next year. Ferrari hypercar. Yep. We talked about that a little bit. I think
that's eventually still kind of vaguely
vague.
We know that they're going to make it, but this rendering is kind of a bit more speculative than some of the renderings that we don't really know what it's going to look like. But Ferrari has confirmed they're going to do an electric supercar.
Yeah, and I think 2025 is maybe a little bit early even, so it's hard to say, but it's another one of those rumors that's out there. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to highlight one that I particularly enjoy while Smith is writing and while we're talking. I don't know that this vehicle is ever actually going to go into production, but I love the Hyundai Envision 74. It's so pretty. Like, it's so angular. It's so 1980s. And I just imagine being inside of it and having... We were talking about interior cabins today in our Motor One chat. And Smith, I think you posted the Z31 300ZX, the digital cabin that was in
there. Was that today or was that yesterday?
Wasn't it today? My days mixed up. Maybe it was yesterday. Anyway,
I have no idea. Is the sun still there? I don't know. Is it April yet? What?
You definitely posted it though.
Yeah, I'm always posting that.
I would love like kind of a retro futuristic interior like that. a look like that, but using modern materials where you can actually get away with it. And it's actually functional rather than just like looking fun. You know what I mean? Like,
I love the way you phrase that because it's a 40-year-old car. You know, the 300 that I'm referencing here with the digital dash. But you could sit in it and somehow it still feels futuristic.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like 80s futuristic, but it still has this weird futuristic vibe. Put digital screens in this.
Exists now that you could do that and actually make it work. Like it would actually be functional and look like that versus, you know, back in the day, they were kind of sort of faking it, you know, but so, yeah, that's my opinion.
We reported on this that Hyundai was working on some sort of mid-engine, sporty, you know, premium sports car, and then they eventually canned it. But I don't think, like, with a lot of big businesses, like, I don't think good ideas totally die. Like, there's something that they could bring it back in the next few years, or maybe when they're in a position to just have more fun and spend some money. Like, this car is amazing. I love, love, love this concept. And I would love to see a production version of this, but who knows?
When that came out, I commented back then. Now, admittedly, I haven't been following the socials that much more recently on this. I didn't see it one single person say anything negative about it. No. On the internet. This is the internet. Like, Big Bird has negative things tossed out there. I mean, this car, Hyundai, they have to be listening. And I mean, it has to at least have them thinking, wow, everybody likes this thing. I don't know. Should we build one? Everybody likes it.
appeals to the 35 to 45 year old guys with nostalgia for the 80s, and there are a lot of them.
There are a lot of them.
Yep. So, and that's the thing, is that whoever designed this nailed it with the turbo style wheels and the wedge design, the pixel grill, like they just nailed it. And
I think I was just going to say, I think my only problem with this car is like, how do you sell it as a Hyundai? Like, you're not going to put it in your dealership next to a Venue and say, oh, do you want a Venue or do you want our mid-engined, supercar, 80s nostalgia supercar? Like, I think there's a way for them if they did a very limited production and launched it online. But I think the Hyundai brand to the masses is still a low-end brand that's not capable of building something like this, which is not true because we know the end cars are amazing, right? So it's like, it's hard to sort of get to that point where you're able to sell these cars or convince buyers that like this is a great, great car that you're going to buy. So I think that's probably part of it too.
Yeah. I mean,
no, I think that's fair.
You have to make the business case in an age of SUVs. How many of these are we going to sell? Sure, everybody loves them. Everybody loves chocolate cake, but if you eat chocolate cake every day, you're going to die. It's not sustainable, right?
But maybe you're going to die happy, Smith.
Yeah.
You'll die happy, but a dead person doesn't buy a new car.
Right? That's true.
I mean, it's kind of a weird example, but you have to find a business case. And as much as I love this and as much as I think the universe loves it, is the business case there when the Ford Mustang the last 2 years have been its worst sales years ever? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
It's a tough business case. I hope they find a way to make it work because damn.
So yeah. Jeff, we are an hour into the show. Are there any specific vehicles you want to call out that are left, or should we move over to our cheap car challenge?
Let's see. I wanted to pick my favorite, and the Envision is up there.
Go for it. Wait, which one?
The one we just talked about, the Hyundai.
The Envision.
Okay. Sorry.
Although I think so, the Polestar 02 is really interesting to me.
Okay.
Because it's fully confirmed. They said they're going to build it. It could have like 800 horsepower. It's a convertible, which you don't see a lot of those anymore. Mm-hmm. And it is maybe one of the best looking cars I've ever seen. And I got to see it in person twice. And it is just, it's absolutely gorgeous. Even with the roof on, because it is a hard top in concept form. I don't know if that'll carry over production, but my problem usually with convertibles is that they look so dorky with the roofs on that it's hard. It's a hard sell, but like this car looks better with the roof on than it does with the roof off. And it's such a good looking car. And I know Polestar in general is just nailing everything that they do. And I'm excited to see this one. That's probably my favorite that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce, do you have a favorite on this list?
I mean, mine was the Envision. That's why I pulled it Envision. Up. I'm not going to lie. Like I love that stupid car. I don't think it's going to enter production if I'm being totally honest with myself, but I like it a lot.
I mean, it's there too. My realistic pick on here would be the Nissan Z Nismo.
We've seen
camouflage prototypes with the new split grill. And I think that makes the car look just a gazillion times better.
Agreed.
I think it's such a good looking car. I mean, if they just put that split grill just on the regular Nissan, I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen in a couple of years.
Like January-ish, right after Tokyo Auto Salon, where at least in Japan, Nissan is going to offer that as an aftermarket accessory.
So it's a dealer Nismo option
catalog. Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
It'll be a dealer option that the dealer would install.
Right.
You wouldn't get it that way from the factory. But I mean, that car with that new fascia on it, with the split grill design, give it a little bit more power, give it a little bit more suspension, a little bit more brakes, and don't price it into the stratosphere. People, I mean, I think people are already forgetting about the Supra with the new Z, and that could just take it to another level.
maybe.
Yeah, I like the Z a lot, but I definitely think the Nismo is going to take it over the edge and make it like really great. Especially, I mean, we know a Toyota Supra GR MN is coming too, so I think those two together will be really interesting.
Awesome. Yeah. What are your pick, folks? Podcast at MotorOne.com. Email us. First, you should probably go over to MotorOne.com, look up 30 future supercars, sports cars, all of these things worth waiting for. Email us what your picks are, podcast at MotorOne.com, and comment at MotorOne Podcast. Comment on our homepage with articles that go up every Friday. Heck, you can comment in Jeff's article that he wrote. Say, Jeff, type, I heard you on Rambling. Here's what I think. We'll get it.
Yep. And remember, March 22nd, you're going to be able to respond real time live right then to our comments. If you think we are a bunch of idiots, you can tell me in real time and it'll hurt my feelings.
And you can tell me and it won't. Bruce is an idiot. I'll be like, okay, that's fair. That's fair. No, okay. Bruce isn't it. Bruce is far, far better at this than any of us. So, and to prove that point, we're going to do a cheap car challenge where he probably picks the best cars and the rest of us just pick garbage. Oh, so what's the crux of this cheap car challenge, Bruce?
Sure. So we decided $5,000 for a Ford Mustang, a Chevrolet Camaro, or a Dodge Challenger. I will be fully upfront. I cheated on one and picked a Pontiac Firebird, which I feel is fair.
Oh, didn't we just have this discussion like a half hour ago with the Rockford Files? Anyways,
I think I think the Firebird lumps in perfectly fine with Camaro, Mustang, Challenger.
Okay.
You two disagree, so that's fine.
Let's, hey, they're the same platform.
Exactly.
I could have picked up like a really cool 84 Mercury Capri, but that's all right.
I won't. Hey, I found a Lincoln LSC and I didn't pick it. So don't start with me with close alternatives to these vehicles.
That's the future cheap car challenge. The derivatives, the near derivatives of the cars we really want. But right now, Jeff, you're our guest. Why don't you go first? Obviously, this is inspired by the Mustang's pricing that it was just announced in the comparison with Camaro and Challenger. Yeah. $5,000. What do you got?
Well, so I'm going to send this to you so you can pull it up.
Okay. Well, you put it in private. Oh, you did put it in private chat. Thank you so much.
And it's not super sexy. It's not super cool, but it is just a nice 95 Mustang GT convertible, automatic, nice and clean. Simple. That's a perfect, like, put the top down and cruise on a Sunday car.
Jeff, I gotta be honest with you, your pick is already nicer than any of mine. Northeastern Ohio winters have been hell on my picks.
Yeah, Florida cars are pretty good in terms of like just main, as long as they're not near the ocean, they're usually solid. I did find a fourth gen Camaro that I really liked for a little bit less than this, but the engine was borked, the guy said. So like, let me get something that's actually running. But yeah, I really like this car. I think it would be a nice, just cool car to cruise around in.
This is totally acceptable. You're absolutely right. For $4,300, this is in Jupiter, Florida. This looks completely, yeah. If you had to have a Mustang in your life and you didn't have a lot of money, I got no complaints here. Smith?
Well, you guys know I have a 1995 Mustang GT convertible in my garage, right?
I do know this. And this man can't spell the word convertible, which is not the best thing sign in the world.
It's the convertible.
Yes. We can cruise together. I'll drive up to Michigan and we'll just cruise.
I agree, but get rid of those tri-spokes. The tri-spoke wheels have not aged well.
They have not.
Honestly, this, what was the facelift for this generation? What year was it? 97, 98?
That was 99. 94 to 98 was sort of the rounded style. And then 99, they went to the new, what they call the new edge.
So my dad had still a 90, he had a 2000, 2001 silver coupe on this, just a base. And I still, to the with the Trice folks, and I still to this day think that that is the best generation design, the facelift version of this generation.
It's a much improved. I had an 03 Cobra, that I really like the styling versus the 95. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of money into the Cobra. I got rid of the Cobra. To your point, if you want a V8 pony car right now, this is your entry point, and you get actually a very decent car for a surprisingly low amount of money. I paid $3,500 for mine a few years ago, with a 5-speed manual and I think 90,000 miles on it. It was in good shape driving from day one. These values are starting to come up a little bit now, but if you get mm-hmm. back into that kind of 90s era with the Mustangs and the Camaros and Firebirds of that era are pretty reasonable too. Mm-hmm. Good way to go. Fortunately with this, 215 horsepower is all you're going to get out of that V8. You're going to want to do a little bit of work on it, especially with the auto.
Yeah. The odometer also said it says 180 on the odometer. I don't know how true that is, but
I bet
this is probably 180,000.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say that there's no way this guy kept it a garage, garage queen 95 Mustang GT. But
oh yeah. It's 180K certainly. Cause I mean, it's got a replaced head unit. Like, yeah.
He left out.
The intake has been resprayed a very, very bright shade of silver.
What? Hold on. I'm pulling up that picture.
Yeah. Right. I'm just going through the images now. My car came with a tri-spokes and when I first got them, I painted them black to have them look like the 93 Mustang Cobras R's had, but I just can't do the tri-spokes on those.
Yeah. Okay. Smith, do you want to go next or you want me to?
Why don't you go next?
Okie doke.
I'll bring up the tail end here.
This is the nicest one I found by far. The other ones are rough. but $4,990, so $10 off of our budget. This is a red 2003 Ford Mustang Premium convertible. It looks pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're watching on YouTube, this one is in Euclid, Ohio. I guess if you want to contact the seller, but leather interior, convertible again. Like this, I didn't see any reason to be upset with this one. I can't quite. Looks like it's got 127,000 mm-hmm. is what the seller is saying on it. But original radio. Yeah, I think this one's pretty good.
Yeah. No, it looks fantastic. You can't go wrong with a red Mustang, right? That's the 6-cylinder, which I think in 03 was that maybe close to like 200 horse. I don't know if they were up to 200 horse yet out of that.
Kissing 200. I bet it's like 190. I'll look it
two
up
out
right
of that.
Now, but you're right.
Because the GTs cylinder. Of that era were 260. It's a sharp looking car. I always thought the ergonomics in those felt a little weird. I don't know if either of you have ever had a chance to drive. Well, Jeff, you said you were in one. Did it feel kind of weird getting behind the wheel? And it's like the position of the steering wheel and the dash, it just always felt a little awkward to me.
I can't even remember, but I think so. I know just in general, the ergonomics of these older Mustangs just was not very good. Right. Yeah.
Well, that platform. The platform under there, I mean, that's still a highly modified Fox platform that goes back to 1979.
So I just looked it up. At that time, the V6 made 193 horsepower.
Okay. So. Okay. I mean, in that car, it's still plenty to have to go out and enjoy, have some fun with.
You're going to put the top awesome down. You're summer cruiser. Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That looks great. Right, guys picked way better stuff than I did. My God.
Well, things get rough from here, my friend.
Well, I have two picks. I'll start with my first one here. Give me just a second. I got to switch some stuff around here. I very much wanted to not get a Mustang because it's like I've been down that road so many times and I've preached it so many times. So it's like, what else can we find? And I was like, can you even find a Challenger? I was prepared to get like a 1982, like captive import Challenger.
I was looking for one of those too.
And I couldn't find one, but then I found this 2010 on Facebook Marketplace, which is the weird, I mean, hey, Facebook Marketplace, if you want to go find buyer beware. I mean, this one is down by Detroit. So, I mean, it's a couple hours from me.
This has to be a V6. There's no way this is a V6.
I'm sure it is. Well, but wait, there's more. Run and drive, very quit. Just needs water pump. You can't bet this deal.
Okay.
And we got two photos here. It's dark blue. It's got the stripes there on the fenders. It's got the Challenger script down low. I mean, I don't know enough about these cars. It's got the little spoiler back there. It's got fog lamps in the front air dam. It's got little scoops on the hood. I don't know enough to know if those are features of a V8 or not. The listing does not say one way or another what it is. It's just 130,000 miles, automatic transmission, exterior color black, which, okay.
It's not accurate at all.
That's a very blue looking black. Yeah. And I might need to do some water pump, but it's $4,000.
Yeah.
And it's a 2010 Dodge Challenger. Yeah. Oh, and it looks like the fender. Is that damage on the fender?
That looks like it might be a little damage there on the fender.
It looks a little dinged up. Hey,
kiss something there.
It's a 2010 Challenger. I was super excited to find it because that was the only thing that I found even close to $5,000.
I did find
within a 500 mile radius of me.
A Chrysler Conquest that I almost said it's close enough, but I didn't. But I did find a Chrysler Conquest.
Yeah, a Conquest. Yeah, that's not going to be a captive.
No,
not going to be a captive import.
Jeff, did you find? Do you have a second one ready?
I had a fourth gen Camaro that had an engine issue, but I really was like looking. Let me see if I can find it again.
No problem. Here, I'm going to throw up my second one here real quick. This is the aforementioned Firebird. It is a 96. It is $4,995. It is at the very like limit of my driving range. It is in Lafayette, Indiana. It's a 3.8 liter V6 with an automatic. So it is the bottom of the bottomest rungs of Firebirds. But it was the only one I could find, honestly, in our price range. And this is totally my opinion. I always preferred the Firebird over the Camaro, especially in this generation. Like earlier, we can kind of debate things, but this generation of Camaro versus Firebird, I vastly prefer the Firebird. Mm-hmm. So I like the pop-up headlights. I like the sharper nose. To me, that generation of Camaro always just kind of, it didn't look finished in a certain way with the design. Like I can't put it better than that, or I can't explain it more than that. And so, yeah. So again, this is the bottom of the rung, but it fulfills all of our assignments. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any opinion on this gen Firebird?
Jeff?
No, I really don't. I mean, I like the way it looks, but I don't, it's honestly like, kind of a blind spot to me. I know the Mustang well, and I know the Camaro well, but the Pontiac and Firebird stuff, I'm like, I don't really know.
Can you bring that back up? Does that have T-tops on it?
Hold on. I was pulling up.
It looked like it might have had T-tops. And I'm with you. I prefer pretty much every generation Firebird over the Camaro. Second gen
T-tops, my friend.
Second, look at that, man.
Whoops.
Yeah. It's the six cylinder, but you know what? Yank the T-tops out. It's red. Go for a cruise and enjoy the hell out of that. I really like
the taillights on this car. I love the taillight design on this car. Kind of like RX-7.
Yep.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
You get one of those. That's the first and second gen?
Fourth gen.
Well, so yeah, that's fourth gen. You get one of those. Like a little bit later on with the WSX package that had the four nostrils up front. That's just one of the meanest looking cars of all time. I really like the fourth gen Firebirds better than the Camaros, especially the facelifted fourth gen that came out, I think, in 98, where they had kind of that weird bubbly front. But 93 to 97, the Camaros look good too. And I actually found a lot of those in my price range.
I did not find a single one around me. It must just be a regional thing. But here is Jeff's pick, his fourth gen Camaro. So we were just talking about the Firebird. Here's the Camaro. Again, there's something about the nose, those super, super recessed taillights.
I actually really like that. I like that a lot.
I have a big soft spot for this car. So my dad had the Mustang, and then my mom had the fourth gen Camaro. One of my core memories when I was a kid is that she accidentally slammed my finger in the door, my thumb in the door. And I lost my fingernail when I was a kid. And that was like, I was very young. And that's
traumatic.
It was a traumatic memory. But I still love that car. I loved riding in that car. And this one, I wasn't really going to add it because it's so cheap because the engine basically doesn't work. But my thought was, you can do an LT1 swap in this car. It's going to go over budget.
Swaps in this car.
You could do so many swaps in this car. But I was
you could buy a kit. And have it delivered from Amazon that will let you LS or LT swap.
Yeah. So I was like, that would be a cool car to do an engine swap on, especially for how cheap this one is.
And the interior is super duper nice on this one. The interior is untouched. And as we were saying before, it's got T-tops. So I agree.
75,000 miles too, according to the listing.
I mean, for 1800, you could buy that. Go get a decent junkyard LS engine for another grand and then toss somebody another grand or so to install it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a common thing. You know, there you go. So 18, 28, $4,000.
Can maybe come in under five if you know where to look.
I think you could, especially if maybe you didn't mind doing a little bit of elbow work yourself, you know, doing a little bit of stuff. If maybe take the engine out yourself and have someone else put a new one in, you could be under $5,000, I bet. The nose of this car bothers me.
It's got a really long overhang. That's the only thing that's weird to me, but I love the design. It's just so weird and cool. The back end is awesome on this car.
I think the best part is the profile. The way that it has this raised section that goes into the side windows, it's probably not functional, but it looks damn cool.
especially in this color, looking at the profile, it almost kind of looks like a Subaru SVX, kind of.
A little bit. No, you're not wrong there.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
The early mid 90s into the late night. Well, not the late 90s so much, but the early and mid, it was all about the rounded edges.
Yeah.
Just round everything off. The Mustang went that way. The Camaro went that way. And then everything kind of sharpened up towards the end.
Well, then once you get in the later 90s, you get into the retro thing where the new Beetle came out, and then you had the Mini in the early 2000s. And we were talking about it last week, seventh, eighth generation Thunderbird, that whole retro. We were talking about the SSR and the HHR, that retro became a whole thing, PT Cruiser. But early 90s, there was just this really futuristic, future looking sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And again, the SVX, a lot of vehicles like that.
Well, instead of the future, you ready for something a little bit different from the past?
I'm ready. Give it to me.
How do you guys feel about Mad Max?
I like it. Did you find a Mustang 2 Mad Max edition for this money?
I found this. It's a 1980 Chevrolet Camaro. It's in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, which technically is a day's drive for me if I take the ferry across the lake. And the ferry actually goes right to Manitowoc. So I could go there and pick up this beast of a Camaro.
That thing is terrifying.
It's been driven 123,456 miles. I don't think that's
not accurate. I don't think that's accurate. One in front of that. I think it's 1,123,000 miles.
If you're not, for those listening on our audio platform, Spotify, Apple, we love you,
etc.
Go over to Motor One Podcast on YouTube so you can see this beastly Camaro. 1980. So that's towards the end of the second generation. It's mostly black. There are some rust spots on it.
It was black at one time. Now it's kind of
It doesn't have like a big racing hood, but it has like some sort of weird vented hood. That is the biggest, like, lower chin. I don't even know air dam. I don't even know what that is. It looks ready for Mad Max.
Spoiler: if Jay Leno was the chin spoiler,
it's the Jay Leno of chin spoilers. The description sold me. I don't know a whole lot about it. That's all I need to read. It needs some work. That's fair. Has hookups for nitrous, a full roll cage, fiberglass front end. It does run and drive, but needs a tune-up. Lots of stuff done to it. Not sure what it's worth. 100% willing to negotiate some.
And what's the asking price? What's the starting price? Oh,
$5,000. $5,000. Right at the limit. And you look inside, and yep, that sucker has a very, very full looking roll cage in there.
Yeah, that's a
I mean, it looks like it has a complete interior. That looks like the Camaro dash, GT steering wheel. Paint has a little patina on it. Not going to lie there. But I mean, I would just murder that out with the combination of the flattest paints that I could find.
Yeah. Maybe that's a car that deserves like a rattle can paint job. You go to Walmart, you buy flat black spray paint and you just spray paint it.
Get rid of the exhaust. Just put pipes right up through the hood.
Yep. It looks like a car you'd pick up on Wreckfest and do a figure eight. Crash test
derby on it. Absolutely does.
Just spray paint the numbers on the side and
But hey, runs and drives. It's 1980 and it's $5,000. I saw that and I was like, I shouldn't be as seriously thinking about this as I am. I already have one car that doesn't run in the garage.
Very good. Well, I think that's good. I think we're going to end it on a high note with that.
Yeah, I think we better end it there before I do something really crazy.
But Jeff, go ahead. Do you have anything you want to promote, whether it's Motor One related or your personal life related or anything like that? This is your chance, man.
Well, follow Motor One on social media, Motor1.com on Twitter, Instagram. I do all the tweeting and Instagramming there. So if you want to yell at me, go for it. Check out all my stuff that I'm writing. I've been doing a lot of lists lately, especially the supercars, fastest cars, most expensive cars. So if you're into that stuff, just head to my author page on Motor One.
Okay, very good.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. I know it's totally. It's late and it's dark at your house. It's always dark at your house.
It's always dark.
Yeah. If anyone really wants to help Jeff out, he needs what I'm going to call, he needs a case of light bulbs. If we could just like crowdfund Jeff, a case of light bulbs, I think we could fix this whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Yeah. But thank you everybody for listening. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all of our listeners, all of our commenters. Again, March 22nd, mark your calendars. That's the big day. We are going live. Rambling About Cars will be live from that point. As far as we know, unless this plane takes off and immediately crashes into the ground, we're doing that from now on, starting March 22nd. So, please join us. Please, we are working on getting guests. We have some feelers out to folks. We are, getting there on that, and we're really excited about it. It's going to be a whole different show. It's not going to be a whole different show. That's not the right thing. It's still going to be Smith and I. We're still going to be talking cars.
It's going to be the same show.
You guys are going to be able to comment though.
You'll be able to participate with us. All the randomers.
Totally. And so that's going to make it a little bit different. And I look forward to it. I look forward to reading your comments and being like, Smith, that's a terrible idea. And Bruce, what the hell are you talking about? And, I encourage that and I look forward to that. So thank you so much, everybody. Is there anything else we need to promote or anything? Or I think that's the show.
I think we got it. Cool. More good stuff coming next week. Yes, the live show is coming up in later in the month, but we are still doing stuff every week. So happy to have you along wherever you're at. Spotify, Weezer, Deezer.
We are on a service called Deezer. I've never heard of it. I don't know where you find it, but if you're listening on Deezer, thank you.
We love having you along. We'll see you.
Yeah. Yep. Talk to you later, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.